Welcome to Near Death Experience Podcast, the official source of audio accounts for the Near Death Experience Research Foundation. I'm Chaz Hathaway, author of Life in the Spirit World: What Near-Death Experiences May Teach About Life on the Other Side. Today we're going to share the experience of Jim, who actually shares it twice, or in, you know, an initial account and then an expanded version later. And anyway, we'll just go into it and then we can talk about it afterward. Jim says, "I was like in a huge void with spots of light like stars around. Somehow I felt like I was between the earth and the moon. I felt this overwhelming presence next to me on my right side, like the moon, but it was an intelligence. It radiated love, far beyond anything I had dreamed or heard of before, sort of like a father. There was no image. He made me feel sad that I had ended up in that condition, like a scolded child, but in a loving way. I felt other beings nearby, but no shapes or faces. There was an overwhelming sense of peace and contentment all around me. Like the doctor said on the program tonight, on the 2nd of February, I'm sorry, the 25th of February, 2003, it was like being home. The being next to me had me look at myself lying on the hospital bed through this tube of light. Now it's a cliche. He asked me if I wanted to return to that body again, and it took me a while to decide. He told me I would have to come up with three reasons why I should be allowed to return. This was what opened my eyes on the radio show tonight. Nobody had ever mentioned having to come up with reasons before. At the time, I was realizing how pitiful people's goals were, who surrounded themselves with material things and people to adore them. They really didn't know that it won't make any difference. I can remember the first reason I gave had something to do with showing love for my mother. The second reason was I had not truly loved anybody yet. I was only 14. I forgot the third, but I think it had something to do with showing love to fellow human beings. Again, the reason I was allowed to return was I had not learned the love experience. This is the second thing that opened my eyes about the radio show that made the show more than a sensationalist hoax. Once the third reason was out, there was a dazzling flash, and I was lying on the bed. At the time, I was surrounded by ice packs to keep my body temperature down. I knew there were people nearby tending to me. I reached out to the nurse and told her the person at the end of my bed had a dress just like my mother's, and of course it was my mother. That's the end of the initial experience. Here's the expanded version submitted on the 11th of April, 2003. At the time, I wasn't really a child. I was 14, but being 6 feet 3 inches tall, I was hanging around with much older kids. We were drinking beer and hanging around these woods at the end of Lido Beach in Sarasota, Florida. When it was time to leave, about 1 o'clock in the morning or so, we all piled into this car except for me and one other who sat on the trunk. I fell off and hit my head on the pavement, which knocked me out. The other guy on the trunk thought I was faking, so he lifted me up by the hair and let me drop. The second bash to the head caused a skull fracture, and blood started pouring out of my left ear. The other kids thought I was going to die, so they took off in the car and left me there. They drove to my best friend's house, woke him up, and told him I was dead. Luckily, a nearby hotel owner had called the police over noisy kids in the woods, us, and the officer arrived just after the kids left. Miracle number one. He called an ambulance, and they took me to the emergency room where the top neurosurgeon had just or just happened to be, for another emergency surgery. Miracle number two. They had to shave my head and drill holes in my skull to relieve the pressure on my brain. They called my parents and told them there was a slim chance I would live, and if I did, the chances were I would be a vegetable at best, and most likely suffer from epileptic fits. I am the oldest of 8 children, so this was not good news. I was unconscious for the next 8 days. My mother was a nurse when younger, so she stayed there the whole time. I remember the doctor telling me all I had to do was sneeze and I would die. I thought he was nuts for packing all that ice around me. I was in the hospital 7 weeks, including an extra week for a staph infection on my back discovered on my first release day. I rarely tell anyone about what happened during that NDE. It scares the heck out of people. I want to tell them that it's okay to die. I didn't even tell my wife about it until last night after seeing it on the web. One thing I remember, which is really difficult to describe, is that while looking at myself on the table and weighing the option to return, the being I was talking to made it seem that returning to Earth was one of many options. I had to admit to him and myself that the reason I was in that predicament was my own doing. I had taken an above-average intelligence, good healthy body, and wonderful environment, and thrown it away. Essentially, I got the feeling that God did not have his hand in everything the way we were taught in church. I felt or understood that we are pretty much here for our own here on our own for the experience. My approach to other living things changed after that. I feel now that every being here has a divine right to exist without having to be subjugated by other people, governments, abusive spouses, etc. People and dogs especially sense that. Can sense that. You might find the analogy strange, but something like Crocodile Dundee, the power he had over animals and acquaintances. I seem to be able to communicate on a much lower level. I know I have been to a place very few people have been able to return from, and that is because of those 2 extremely fortunate circumstances labeled miracles. Numbers 1 and 2. I have never met another person who has had a near-death experience. I wonder what kind of electricity would flow. I think about all the otherwise healthy people who were not plucked from the grip of death. Some parts of the movie Jacob's Ladder scare the heck out of me. Overall, though, I don't dwell on how lucky I am to be here. I do, however, think about people's barreling through life foolishly and not appreciating its gift. John Lennon had the right idea, and so did Duane Allman. That's my big question in life. Why do the people who preach love and peace die so soon? That's the end of the experience. And just in answer to that question, I wonder if it's because they learned it so quickly. Anyway. Okay, so first off, Jim doesn't have, it's not that he's not very detail-oriented or that he doesn't share a lot of detail. It's more that he doesn't share the details that make a good flow about his story. And it is a beautiful story. So, you know, at first you don't know how he got into this situation of apparently being dead and so forth. He just starts with, I was in a huge void with spots and so forth. And then you hear about things in his experience that suggest that he should have made some different choices than he did. But you don't know what those are until you hear the expanded version. And in the expanded version, there's none of the bright light and otherworldly experience. It's all what led up to it and his thoughts about it afterward. And so you kind of have to piece it all together. So he's this boy of 14 just kind of living for himself, and you know, many people would say, you know, at 14 everybody's just living for themselves, but I have not found that to be the case. I found it to be very easy to live for yourself at age 14, and very common, but not expected, and certainly not something that everybody experiences. I've known some of the most unselfish and loving people in the world were around that age. And I think it's an age of searching. And often the first place that people search is their own selfish desires, because that's what's already before them. That's what's there. And you could dive skin deep, if you will, for answers to who you are and who everyone else is and what the universe is. But if you dive deeper, you start finding that that is an age of really deep contemplation, if you let yourself get to that point. Anyway, that's my experience based on several meeting several people and knowing many people who have had experiences, as well as knowing a lot of teenagers, frankly. I've met many of both. Anyway, so that's why I don't say, you know, what 14-year-old isn't living for themselves, whatever, because there are many who are living incredibly selfless lives at that age. Anyway, so he's living this, you know, selfish teenage lifestyle gets himself in, you know, I mean, he's out drinking with friends, and then they speed off, probably drunk driver too, and he's riding on the trunk. You know, that's stupid enough, but he hits his head in that process, and it nearly kills him. It freaks out his friends, who just take off, and gratefully, there were police who had been called over the noisy kids in the woods that they were, and so the police is able to get an ambulance and rush him to an emergency room in the ambulance. So he's apparently out for like a week. And in that time was when I think we find him in the huge void. And when we talk about spots, he talks about spots of light like stars all around. I hear this so often in these experiences. Stars that are recognized as actually being people, or dots of light that are like stars, or sometimes people will say they are stars and yet they're people, and often they're in space and therefore of course they look like stars, and some say that they're stars but they're rushing by and so forth. And I'd be fascinated to see what this actually looks like visually. As a space geek and astronomy enthusiast, I would love to see that image. But he finds himself in this space that he felt like was between Earth and the moon, and he feels a presence next to his side. It's interesting too that he says like the moon, because imagine being between the Earth and the moon. While the Earth would certainly stand out to you as this bigger, more beautiful thing, the moon would be so much closer as than what we're used to, that it would feel like a very large presence also, and a very meaningful presence, you might say. And yet, it doesn't say whether he actually sees the moon, and I'm not sure it really matters. It's just, comparing it to the moon gives a little bit of a feeling about what he is feeling, this presence, but intelligent. And it radiated love, this great love that's a fatherly love, you might say. He says, but there's no image. He can't see anybody there. He just felt it. And he keeps talking about this program. I suspect it was probably like one of these coast-to-coast programs, because, you know, they often interview people about near-death experiences and things like that. So I'm assuming it was something like that. And it kind of eggs him on to share this experience. But he is given in this experience a choice of whether or not to come back. But if he wants to come back, he needs to have three good reasons to. And this is an interesting thing, because here he is, 14 years old, so he's a schoolboy, I mean, and he's given, you know, you need to tell me three reasons why you want to go back. I can totally picture a school counselor saying, give me three reasons why we should not give you detention right now. You know, it almost sounds that kind of thing, but with much more love behind it. Give me three reasons why you should go back and we'll let you go. And all three of his reasons are based in love. He needed to show better love for his mother, which, again, my first temptation is to say, shouldn't every 14-year-old? But no, there are some who are really good at it, and some that really, really struggle with it. And most people are in between there somewhere. But his first reason for wanting to come back is he wants to do something, or wants to do more of showing love for his mother. The second is that he hadn't loved anybody yet. He says, I was only 14. I assume he means romantically, that he'd never been in love. He'd never had someone who he truly, absolutely loved more than anyone else in the world, which, you know, that sounds like a good reason to come back too, and a reason that is very much rooted in love. And the third, he says, I can't remember it, but it seems like it was something to do with showing love to fellow human beings, so showing love to everyone. These sound like very good reasons to me. You know, for a 14-year-old boy who had struggled with selfishness and being, you know, he was focused on what he wanted, on his drinks and hanging out with friends and having a good time and stuff like that. His focus had been rather selfish, and he's feeling like he needs to focus on love now. And having heard this program, this is interesting that he talks about the sensationalist hoax. I think he was tempted in hearing the radio program to think, this is just some sensationalist thing. It's a hoax. It's fake. But then he's like, wait a minute. Oh, I had this experience myself. Which I find so interesting, that so many that have these experiences, until they really have embraced the experience, often don't believe in the near-death experiences of others. That's so bizarre to me. And yet, they have this experience and they shut it out because they can't make sense of it. And then they hear these experiences of others and they're like, that's totally bogus. They're just doing that for money or for attention or whatever. And then it like clicks at some point and they're like, hang on. That thing I've been shutting out of my mind all these years, it's the same thing they're talking about. It's as if in the human form, we're just not built to accept these things automatically. And we have to train ourselves or work on our faith. We have to develop faith, even when we've seen what many of these people have seen. Even when people have basically touched the face of God, many of them, they come back and they're like, I'm going crazy. My mind is gone. I'm nuts. And yet this experience was incredible and wonderful, but that's not the kind of experience that one should have. And they try to talk themselves out of it, and they convince themselves that it's a hoax, or not a hoax, but that it was a mental breakdown of some kind. And when they hear the same experiences by others, they say, this is just a hoax, you know, that they're trying to throw, they're being sensationalist. And so this may have been a little bit of what Jim was going through, but hearing it from another person and finally associating it with his own, he's led to think, wait a minute, this is something. Which is interesting to me too, because many people of faith reject these experiences because they don't go along with their religious values or what they understand to be true in their religion. And often it's a very blanket, hard, unnecessary doctrine, if you will, that holds them from ever believing in it, such as the idea that we don't have prophets like you did in the Bible. We don't have those today. And because of that, we have to shut out everything and anything that, you know, smells of prophets. And it's kind of like, why would you shut out something like that? Why would you put up a wall like that? And yet, many religions do. Many religions do. And even in the religions that do accept some of these things, there's still sometimes small things that they're like, no, that can't be right then. And there's some small thing they don't quite understand about an experience, and so they reject the entire experience along with the entire idea of a near-death experience. And that is unfortunate as well. I think churches would do well to study these things and seek to better understand what's going on. Because while many of the things that you may hear at face value may not be quite what you think. For example, somebody finds themselves in complete darkness and they come back straight from that void and say, I must have been in hell, because, you know, cast into darkness, outer darkness, if you will. And they assume that because of that, either that the religion that they believe in is wrong, or they believe that they are living absolutely wrong and are doomed to hell, when neither is probably the case. They were probably in the void on their way to the light, and were probably in a place where they were meant to think about their life and reflect on what they had experienced and what they were experiencing, but instead were returned to their body because they were revived or whatever, which is fine, that's great. But they're left to rethink their entire philosophy because they assume from what they hear that they, either their religion was wrong, or that they were wrong, or that this whole near-death experience idea is wrong, or a deception, or something. And I think it's unfortunate when we basically throw out the baby with the bathwater. And we shouldn't be throwing away religions, and we shouldn't be throwing away near-death experiences. If there seems to be a conflict between the two, how about we study both to the point where we can find common ground to work from in order to understand what's going on in the world? Anyway, I find this very interesting, this whole thing to study. I also find it interesting that Jim says that he has never met another person who has had a near-death experience. I don't want to say it's odd to not have met someone who hasn't had a near-death experience. I think it's common for people to believe they have never met someone who has had a near-death experience. But the biggest reason that they haven't is because they haven't, most of the time, many of them anyway, haven't been open to discussing it. If you come across to people as an atheist, for example, you can bet that someone who's had a near-death experience is going to hesitate to share it with you. If you come across as a religious bigot, you are likely to come across as one who would not be open to the near-death experience. If you come across as someone who is spiritual and open and curious, you're very likely to know several people who have had at least some kind of experience along those lines. And, you know, when it comes to people that you know who have had these kinds of experiences, it's not about what you actually believe. It's about what people perceive that you believe. Because, you know, while it doesn't matter what people think, so to speak, quote unquote, whatever, it does make a difference to what they will share with you. If you're talking about, you know, what is possible for somebody to experience, and you put across in your personality, in your manners, in your way of speaking with people, that you're not open to impossibilities, people are not likely to share impossibilities with you. But if you're open and you say, you know, there's so many interesting things, I don't know what to make of them, but they're so cool, and I love to hear them. And you, you know, have this openness to new ideas, you're more likely to be told some of these experiences, which, unfortunately, or fortunately, whatever, however you want to see that, is often why this discussion of near-death experiences is often thrown into the realm of conspiracy theories, alien sightings, and, whatever, the weird things that are unexplained, mysteries, and so forth. Yes, we understand that there is definitely mystery about the near-death experience, but the reason that they're, I think one of the reasons that they're often grouped with those is because it's those who are willing to open their hearts to the possibility of strange and unknown things that makes them susceptible to hearing about them and accepting them. Somebody who is like a very practical person, even if they are spiritual, if they are very practical and they have a very hard-nosed approach to life, then they're likely to just reject anything that's out of the ordinary. So, not to say that we should subscribe to conspiracy theories or alien sightings or whatever, because I don't think that's necessary, but I do think we should be open to the possibility that there is more going on in this universe than we understand. And if we're open about that lack of knowledge, recognition, you know, being open about the recognition that there is much we don't understand, then we're more likely to be told these things. Anyway, that was a long response to that idea, but it makes me think that maybe Jim has come across to people as not very open to these kinds of experiences. But I think he's opening up to it at the time that he posts this anyway. And hopefully he'll come across more. I think he will if he's willing to share it. Sounds like he hasn't shared it very much, and that may be one of the reasons also. You start sharing these kinds of experiences, and people say, you know, my dad, or, you know, something happened when I... And then they just start opening up, because when you start sharing things, people start sharing things. That's just kind of how it works. Anyway, we do have a listener comment from DeLon again, which I'm excited to share, because he talks a little bit more about this using words that we don't have, that we could use words for. So here's DeLon's voicemail.
Hi, Chaz. This is DeLon. Hey, just seems like when I listen to some of these podcasts, I get these different ideas or thoughts and stuff. And on one of these last ones you had about, I believe that Cheryl Duran's experience, near the end you were talking about, coming up with words that try to describe certain experiences, especially have to do with the spiritual or the near-death situation. And I like to, some of those that you come up with, like dysnalgia, a dream flash and that. And I had another one thinking of, when we do our life reviews, even though this don't necessarily have to do with near-death experiences, I've got what I would call an earthly self-life review. Sometimes I start thinking about my own life review, and I'll go back and I'll start getting all these memories of things that I thought, oh, I shouldn't have done that, or maybe I'll have a memory that thinks, oh, that was neat. I'm glad I did that. And sometimes this really helps me to, straighten out my, I guess you'd say, future course to go. In other words, to by reviewing this earthly, to make a difference between that and the near death life review, it helps me in kind of, if I'm trying to figure something out, how I should change my direction of way I'm going, that really helps out. And also on that, when you come up with this dream flash, that reminds me, just the other day, and it actually has to literally do with dreams, you know, while here on Earth. Sometimes, I don't know, I feel some dreams can almost have a connection with, I don't know, the next life, if that makes any sense. I've had some dreams that are, seem so real and bring out, different thoughts that, like he says, I think sometimes, it has almost ties in with, an out-of-body experience, because I had, dreams about both of my children, before they were born, and, I think I might have mentioned this before, I don't know, but, and I quite often have dreams about, like my mom or my dad, brother or sister that have passed on, and, dreams of the past and fun things we've done, but sometimes it almost seems like, I don't know, like we're, going through a nostalgic type thing. Might put that with wishtalgia. So anyway, I had an interesting situation the other day. I had a dream about, being, a certain place outside between my, my house and the garage, what we call kind of the breezeway. But I was dreaming about that somebody, a neighbor came over and I was talking to him. And then in my dream, I remember of having another dream very similar in that same area. And, two or three dreams like that. And I remember those in my dream. And then after I woke up, I thought, oh, that's interesting. And I'm thinking about other dreams that I had similar, like going out in my garage, working on some cars and different things. And I think, oh gosh, all of a sudden it starts bringing up all these other dreams, memories of dreams that I had of doing certain things in that garage. And, these are dreams. I remembered them, but I didn't remember them until I started thinking about them, if that makes any sense. And I thought, well, that's interesting. And I thought, well, let's try some other dreams that I might still remember. And I started thinking about this one shed I go out there. And I thought, okay, now I remember some dreams of doing this and that out there. And all these memories started coming back. I thought, that is so interesting. But anyway, I've always been fascinated with dreams. I know when I was in the Army, just for kicks, I was checking out different books on dreaming from the library. And I decided to make kind of a, what would you call it, a journal in my dreams. And most of our dreams, you know, we don't remember. When I was in the Army, I'd quite often wake up and I'd, oh, the dreams were clear on my mind. So I would keep a little notebook and pencil underneath my pillow. And then I just jot down a few keywords on these different dreams. And the next morning, I could remember them so well. And it was interesting because I'd keep these dreams and I would think, oh, I think the reason I dreamed about this certain thing because I was doing this or maybe I seen this or something. And it was just kind of fascinating to me. And I even had a dream one time. It was all kinds of details. I filled out quite a few pages on it. All the details that came to my mind. But anyway, that's just a thought I don't want to bring up. I, like it says, I don't know how much it has to do with the NDEs, but sometimes I think our dreams kind of do touch the out-of-body experience type thing. So anyway, just some fascinating things to me. I get on these kicks. I kind of like you, and I get quite interested in a little different theories or thoughts. I guess that's it. Bye-bye.
Okay, thank you, Delon, for calling in. What a great comment. And that's such an interesting idea, first off, about the life review in this life. Because I have heard people who have had near-death experiences, who have had life reviews, say, we don't have to wait till we're dead to have a life review. Obviously, it's not going to be, you know, every thought we've ever had in our life that we're remembering. But when we get thinking about our past and kind of pondering and thinking about how we could have done things better, like Delon said, and when we get talking about how we, you know, learned this or we enjoyed this experience or, you know, thinking on the beautiful experiences, thinking on the challenging times and what we've learned from them, and just reflecting on life, there is real value in that. And I think we do need a term for that. I would love to have a term for that idea of really reflecting on your own life in a life review sort of way. And yeah. So if you've got some ideas of a term we could use, or as listeners, if you've got some term that you do use for something like that, let us know. I want to have a word for that, because when we have our own Earth life review, we tend to walk away from them a little bit better. Sometimes we may walk away a little bit ashamed or a little bit, you know, embarrassed about some things that we've done, but generally we tend to look back and say, you know what, I think I should do more of this, or I think I should work on that again. And those kinds of thoughts and those kinds of explorations can often lead us to the greatest life decisions that we can make. And I've noticed too that as I think back on my life and I really start walking through, like the other day when I was trying to remember what I experienced around age 9 or 10, maybe 11, that propelled me into this spiritual journey that I've really been on ever since. And I was becoming surprised at some of the things that I remembered. Not so much that, oh, I forgot that ever happened, but it was things like, wait a minute, that must have happened the same summer that this happened. Wait a minute, that means that when this took place a year later, it must have been affected by that, you know. And it's like we don't draw all these connections on a daily basis because we're just living life. And often we don't associate, you know, for example, a car accident that we had with the really bad day that preceded it. We don't always associate the depression that we experience with the, you know, maybe economic slip that's taking place, or the relationship strain that is taking place. We don't associate it because we're just so busy living life. And admittedly, meditation itself can help to calm the mind and help us think about that. But often meditating specifically on your life can really be really powerful. So very, very cool. Also, concerning dreams, there is an interesting character from history. If you haven't heard of Emanuel Swedenborg, you might want to look him up. He's a very interesting character. And the reason I bring him up is because of this discussion of dreams that Delon brought up. Emanuel Swedenborg lived from 1688. I just had to pull up the Wikipedia article because I don't have this on the tip of my tongue here. But from 1888 to 1772. So he lived to be, what's the math, in his 80s. He did something interesting. He was having very vivid dreams. You know, it sounds, is my understanding, let me just do a quick search here if it mentions, yeah, Journal of Dreams, okay. He was having strange dreams, okay, and he decided he would start keeping a travel journal, and in his travels he would also record his dreams. And I think as these dreams progressed, he began to record them more readily, more often, to the point where it became, I mean, just every morning he would wake up and write down everything that had happened. And if you've ever kept a dream journal, you'll know that the more you write down or record these dreams, the more you will have these dreams. It trains your brain, remember these things. And as he started recording his dreams, he found that they got more interesting, more vivid, and more memorable, and also more spiritual. And this is the point that I kind of wanted to make. There is some connection between dreams and the spirit world, which I don't fully understand. I certainly haven't found a way to make it predictable. You know, do X, Y, Z, and then you'll be able to, you know, have spiritual dreams or whatever. I haven't found anything like that. But the closest thing to that is just what Swedenborg did, which is record your dreams. And as you do that, you'll begin to remember more of them and record everything you can remember, because all those little details, they may not matter with the dreams that you're having now, but as more dreams come, you may tap into something like Emanuel Swedenborg did. And what he found is, or what the history shows, is that he began to have really meaningful spiritual dreams, to the point where he was having what I would describe as near-death experiences on a regular basis. I mean, it's a pretty intense and bizarre and fascinating study, just learning about his life and so forth. And he'd have discussions with angels, discussions with other spirits. He would visit the heavenly realms and the hellish realms. And I mean, he got around, if you will, in these ways. Now, are all of his experiences directly from God? I don't know. I don't think so. I'm just not in a position to say. And I haven't read all his works either. He wrote several books, many of them describing the near-death-like experiences of his. From his writings and so forth, later came people starting to study his work and develop a pseudo-religion, if you will, out of it. Swedenborgism, I don't even know how you say that. Swedenborgism. But anyway, the interesting thing about that is just the question of dreams and the connection that it has to the other side. I know I've had several deeply spiritual dreams, many involving loved ones who have gone on to the other side, such as my grandparents or friends or whatever. And usually when I am in the dream and I feel a lovingness about it, you know, because there's those dreams where it's just weird and they're kind of in the background and, you know, or maybe they're, you know, doing something odd, or, you know, the kind of things, it's like, this is clearly a dream. I mean, this is just ridiculous as dreams go. And those you can obviously throw out. But when there is a feeling of love, a feeling of spirituality, if you will, a feeling of draw toward, you know, something grander, more nostalgic, if you don't mind me using my word again, you know, a lot of times those feelings for me have been indicators that this is probably from a source outside of myself. And often they come from above, if you will. And they don't happen very often, but when they do, I make note of them and I record them and so forth. And you know, as we're talking about recording dreams, these days it has never been easier to record dreams, because you can just download Easy Voice Recorder or any other recorder app. You know, most people don't want to record a YouTube video of themselves while they're, you know, sitting up in bed, because they're, you know, bedhead and grunty voice and everything. But if you just get this Easy Voice Recorder app, it just, you can add the widget to your front screen so that you just turn on your, you know, you wake up your phone and then just click the red button that says start recording. And when you're done, you click it again to stop the recording. And you can, you know, when you wake up in the night, you can get out your thing, tell your dream, turn it off and go back to sleep, and you have recorded your dream. And if you listen to it later, you'll find that you'll be like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that part. Oh, really? Yeah. You know, kind of like DeLon talked about, as he's remembering dreams and exploring them in memory, he's remembering other dreams. And honestly, that's another thing that I find interesting, that, you know, having to do with dream shock. And another term that we came up with being, did I say dream shock? Dream flashes. Dream flashes being these instances of memory of something, whereas dream shock, as we came to call it, is that sense of a feeling of something that has, like, you can't put any substance to it. You wake up feeling this, like, oh, I just had some kind of really something dream, but I remember nothing of it. Anyway, either one of those terms you want to use, it doesn't matter. It's that idea of, as you explore those dreams, you'll begin to remember more. I think that might be, I'd love to hear from experiencers, I think that might be what experiencers are experiencing as they are remembering their near-death experience. They think on it and they walk through it more and they start remembering new little snippets. Oh yeah, and then there was that one guy that I saw just, you know, off beyond the trees or whatever. I forgot about him. And then there was, you know, this voice kind of sound, and they just start piecing it together by re-exploring their memory. And as they remember it, the memory becomes more vivid, more potent, to the point where they might as well have just experienced it because it's that intense. Anyway, very interesting stuff. Very interesting stuff. So, if you would like to support the podcast, you can do so by either purchasing the book Life in the Spirit World, or by going to patreon.com/ndecast and becoming an ongoing monthly contributor. You can also contact the podcast to either share a comment, ask a question, or to share your own near-death experience by emailing neardeathexperiencepodcast@gmail.com or by calling 970-NDECast. And I want to emphasize also that nderf.org has a whole thing for people to be able to easily share anonymously or partially anonymously your experience in a way that's just sharing it among many other experiences. So if you're feeling like, I don't know if I'm ready for it to be, you know, blasted on a podcast or something like that, just putting it up on there will allow people to explore it without knowing who you are, but they'll still be able to learn and grow from it. It doesn't leave any kind of contactability to the individuals. I don't know whether NDERF itself has access to those people through an email or whatever. I don't know, but I know that once those experiences are posted, there's nothing personalized about the identifiers of who is doing it. Many people will put their full name in the experience itself, and because they want to. They want their name known so that if people have questions or want to share more, get more from them, that they can contact them. But it's certainly not required, and it's not even normal to have your full name on there. So if you're just feeling like, I don't know if I'm ready to really get out there, but just put it up there if you're feeling like you need to share it, but you're not feeling ready to share it, if you know what I mean, then that would be a good place to do it, is nderf.org. There's a reason it's the biggest repository of near-death experiences on the planet. It's just so easy to share. Which, of course, for the sake of our podcast, you got to keep in mind that since anybody can share anything, it's possible that some are made up or that they're, you know, invented or whatever, but I'm really getting the impression that for the most part they are genuine experiences, and while I've come across a few that I'm like, I don't know, I'm kind of doubtful, there not very many of those, and you can usually tell, I think. I mean, how would I ever know, I guess, but they seem genuine, and so it's a great place to share. Anyway, so with that, thank you all of you so much again for listening.